Welcome to The Warcast, your geopolitical briefing that tells you what you need to know, when you need to know it. The Warcast is for War on the Rocks members only. Spread the word and tell your friends and colleagues to sign up at warontherocks.com/subscribe. Susanna, Bloom, thank you so much for joining us in this episode of The Warcast to talk about the defense budget, the NDAA. It just came out of conference. So we have a sort of defense bill. What are the big highlights?
Well, it's long. It's another long NDAA, over, 1,200 pages, which had been a hallmark of all of Senator McCain's NDAA. And of course, this bill is named after him, although Senator Inhofe did most of the management, getting it through to this point. And so there's a lot in it is sort of highlight number one. The, top line authorized spending levels are consistent with the budget deal that had been done some months ago. So no big news there. There are some pretty exciting increased investments in research and development funding, things like hypersonics, things like artificial intelligence, things like directed energy, which are all to the good. Some additional ships. Bill increased procurement of LCS, Littoral Combat Ship, by 3 over what the administration asked for. So that's certainly interesting. And then at least on the Senate side, a pretty laser-like focus on the strategic competition with China and Russia. And you see a lot of policies and investments kind of headed in that direction.
Also, the ZTE sanction issue got stripped out during conference. One other thing that got stripped out during conference, I don't know if you saw the Senate SASC language on the roles and missions report.
Yes, I did.
And I saw a lot of that sort of got, not dumbed down, but sort of had the teeth taken out of that. In your experience looking at the budget in the past, had anything quite so sharp been made it through to a final NDAA before?
Well, I hesitate to say never because my knowledge is not encyclopedic, but generally the conference process is kind of about a watering down of very strong positions that, the Senate and the House committees bring into that process. Something else that didn't make the cut was, Chairman Thornberry's, push to kind of substantially cut the what's called the Fourth Estate or the defense-wide accounts or defense agencies and field activities. Which in the end looks like it's just more of a reporting requirement to the good, in my view.
And what are the services? Are there any of the services going to be more happy than the others about the outcome here?
Well, I mean, as usual, or I should say, at least the past couple of years, the Navy will be excited to get some more ships than the administration requested. I think the final aircraft figures were more or less in line with the request, give or take, couple. And, all of the services are beneficiaries of the research development increased investments that I talked about a little bit earlier.
Was there anything that surprised you? Or anything that you saw play out different politically from past NDAAs? I mean, everything's sort of a bit different during this administration.
I have to say, actually, what surprised me was how undifferent it is. I mean, it really is sort of a continuity NDAA, building on 16 and 17, despite Senator McCain or Chairman McCain's absence in this cycle.
It was a bit sad to see that, the bills after obviously named after Senator McCain, not able to attend the vote, not well enough to attend the vote, unfortunately.
Yeah, I agree.
One of the big changes introduced by this bill, perhaps the most ambitious change, has to do with personnel policy and DOTMA and personnel, particularly officer promotion. Could you walk us through some of those issues?
Sure. I mean, the kind of overarching issue here is that, folks in Congress and in the Department of Defense as well are not sure that they have the right personnel management tools that it's going to take to retain a uniformed workforce that can meet some of the new missions, and cyber is the kind of mission area that's referenced most frequently here. And so what Congress has tried to do in this bill is give the Department of Defense a little more flexibility to, directly commission officers at higher ranks who have certain skill sets that the military needs. to, you know, put some more flexibility in the up or out policy, meaning people can stay at certain ranks longer if they have certain skill sets that that the military needs. But, you know, with so many of these policy reforms, a change in authority is only the first step. You know, where you'll be able to see whether or not it actually becomes effective is in the implementation. You know, so what do the services actually choose to do with this new authorities, with these new authorities, and do they have people in their personnel shops who are creative enough to really think about how to leverage the new authority that they have to hire, you know, recruit and retain, you know, these kind of newer or specific skill sets.
And it's my understanding that the services don't have to do a lot of this stuff. These are just new authorities that they can or cannot choose to exercise. Is that right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's basically what Congress has done is created some options, right? And so we'll have to wait and see what the services do, what options they take up.
Well, it's a good step forward at any rate. It was an important thing to address eventually, and maybe it's something that will just get addressed gradually over the years rather than some sort of big, giant, dramatic Goldwater Nichols style bill.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you so much, Susanna. Appreciate you joining us on this episode of the Warcast, and looking forward to having you back on the show.
Thanks, Ryan. My pleasure.